The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
Joining me is Lawrence Reed. He, of course, is the president emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. He's written so many books. When the last time, Lawrence, we had you on, we were talking a little bit about that book that you've written, Was Jesus a Socialist? And I can't help but think, out of all of the things you've written, and you've written a whole lot, has the book on Was Jesus a Socialist, has it gotten the most traction and widespread reading?
Well, you know, I wish I could say yes, Gino, but I also believe that it's really picking up just in recent weeks. But the probably the best-selling book I've done is entitled Excuse Me, Professor, Challenging the Myths of Progressivism. So the Was Jesus a Socialist started out of the gate a little slow, but it's really taken off now. So it might be one of those that's kind of a sleeper.
Well, you know, again, even in that title, The Myths of Socialism, and at Dennis Prager University, you've had a marvelous video vignette, if you will, on socialism. At what point do we get to call progressivism a euphemism for socialism?
Well, I'm already calling it that. I think that I mean, socialists, you have to give them credit for one thing. They don't know much economics or human nature, but they are very good at deceptive marketing. And somewhere along the way, I think they decided that socialism had a bad rap, deservedly, and they needed to find another name, so they slapped progressivism on it. But I don't know that there's all that much difference.
You know, one of the things that I find interesting even about that statement is, again, your book, Was Jesus a Socialist? Why is it important for socialists or progressives to conscript Jesus as part of their narrative in trying to sell an ideology that you've written about that is not just corrupt, but it's insidious. It actually is destructive. It's the exact opposite of human flourishing.
Yeah, and to further the irony, so many socialists are not Bible scholars. They don't read the Bible very frequently, and they ultimately want to put the state where God should be, and they hope that you'll worship that state as opposed to the Creator. So I think it's a marketing technique. They understand that if they can conscript Jesus or superimpose their philosophy onto him, well, there's a whole lot of people in the world, 1 to 2 billion right off the bat, at least, who will immediately perk up and say, well, if Jesus was one, maybe I should be one too. So it's a marketing technique more than anything else, with no accuracy to the claim whatever.
Yeah, I was wondering, Lawrence Reed, if you've ever entertained the notion of writing a new book about have we become socialists? As you're looking out on the landscape, it's been a long time since you and I talked, but it's my understanding, unless my math is wrong, will this upcoming legislation be not one, not two, but three $1.9 trillion bailouts? And what does that actually mean? Is this a way of redistributing wealth, or is the money that they've printed, is that really wealth that's being redistributed?
Yeah, the legislation you're referring to, Gino, that passed today really ought to shock Americans to their very core, because it is an unfathomable figure, second biggest bill in American history, and with the larger one being just a year ago or less. And it's $1.9 trillion ostensibly for coronavirus-related costs, but only about 10% of the total bill goes for that purpose. The rest is pork barrel. It's bailouts for the states, especially the states that have mismanaged this crisis. It's just shocking, and the sheer size of it is something that Americans ought to be shaking their heads at. And it comes on the heels of the most dramatic increase in the nation's money supply in the past year that we've seen in 70 years, 26%.
Now, you're an economist both by training and by trade, and as you think about what's happening, what is Lawrence Reed thinking about as he sees this bill pass? What does that actually mean to our country and our future?
Well, there's a big difference quite often in economics between the short term and the long term. And in the short run, you know, some people are going to get some relief, but a lot of people and a lot of local and state governments that probably shouldn't get a bailout are going to get some, quote, relief too. And a lot of recipients of pork barrel spending are going to really like it. And it may give the economy in the short run what appears to be a kind of a lift, but there's always another side to this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's what really concerns me. The longer term, which may be, you know, a year or more, not very far into the future at all, I think we're going to see much higher price inflation. We're going to see a day of reckoning in the form of a correction. It could be a very substantial one. And certainly future generations are going to be bearing the burden of paying this bill that we are running up in the current day.
Now, as you've been thinking about what's been going on for the last 12 months, we've had a coronavirus, we've had a COVID pandemic. There seems to be a growing, dare I use the term, a growing, not just tolerance, but acceptance of socialism. So we understand a little bit about philosophical Marxism, and then you have what some people are calling this other new worldview that seems to be emerging, ideological social justice, where it seems to be an evil stepchild of cultural Marxism. And what do you see happening in the broadest sense of what's happening with the way people think about governance?
Well, unfortunately, you know, we used to be a people that came together with a broad consensus on a lot of things, but this thrust toward ever bigger government has produced a very divisive culture. It always does. I mean, you go back to the declining days of the Roman Republic, and you'll find that there, too, faction was fighting against faction. Everybody was crawling over each other, trying to get in charge of the massive redistributive apparatus of the state. Socialism breeds conflict. It breeds division. It lives off of it. And socialists are constantly pitting one class against another, rich versus poor, employers versus employees. I mean, they eat, sleep, and drink conflict and strife. All the more reason, in my view, for people to wake up and realize that society is hurtling towards disaster, economically, morally, spiritually, in every sense. And it's time to do something about it.
There's so many great resources at Lawrence W. Reed. And Lawrence, you've written prolifically and even persuasively that socialism doesn't work. It's never worked. It's always ended badly. And off the air, we were talking about the socialism experiments in Russia, China, North Korea, North Vietnam, Venezuela. Has there ever been historically a country that seemed, and again, Hades bent to embrace socialism, and there was a reversal? There was something where a group of people woke up and said, no pun intended on Woketopia. They woke up and they said, socialism is not for me, and they were able to turn it around.
Yes, several that I can tell you about, Gino, within our lifetimes. Back in the 1980s, New Zealand mm-hmm. was a welfare state. It was high tax. It was all kinds of economic interventionism, high tariffs. They were a basket case mm-hmm. In the world. But over a two-year period in the mid-'80s, they completely unwound that. They had one of the biggest reductions in the size of the public sector as a portion of the economy that any country has seen in the last century. And now New Zealand, all these years later, is considerably free and, in fact, most recently rated the second freest economy in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, and another good example, if we have time, would
sure.
be post-World War II Germany. When, you know, think of it, Germany in 1945 was defeated, flattened, demoralized, destroyed, mm-hmm. occupied, several million refugees pouring in from the east. They had had Hitler socialism for more than a dozen years. And one man named Ludwig Erhard worked his way to the top in the late 1940s and engineered the famous German economic miracle. He slashed taxes. He reduced the size of the public sector. He restored sound money. And we know that period now of the 50s and 60s as the rebirth of Germany in a free economy. And of course, don't forget Great Britain, mm-hmm. Which went socialist after World War II. And then 30 years later, Margaret Thatcher had to come in to undo as much of it as she could.
Now, based on those examples that you've just given, you know, we look all the way back to Ronald Reagan, we fast forward to Donald Trump, we see this new cycle. What gives Lawrence Reed hope that we can turn this around? What would you say to the listener who says, I'm not good with socialism? What are some of the practical resources that you would recommend that people might read or think about to help them think about how they can personally get involved of resisting socialism?
Well, I'm an eternal optimist. I believe that people are creatures of ideas, and they can change their course, change their path with a change in ideas. And sometimes it does take some real pain before they wake up, but often they do. And so, and besides, pessimism is kind of self-fulfilling. Mm-hmm. If we give up and say, well, you know, all is lost, we can't turn it around, well, then that's probably what will happen. But good people don't do that. Good people of solid character fight the good fight and make for a better day. And so I'm hoping the American people will do precisely that. In terms of resources, I certainly would refer people again to my website mm-hmm. because it has links to a lot of other excellent resources. But there you'll find a wealth of information. It's at lawrencewreed.com in current commentary. The Foundation for Economic Education is terrific. I've
yes.
been associated with them for a long time. And that's a website that's even easier to remember, fee.org. Tons of great stuff every day at fee.org.
Now, do you anticipate that there's going to be not just there's intended and unintended consequences when you release this much money into the system? Do you have any advice for people to protect their assets or circumstances in a profligate economy where people are printing money like it's toilet paper, only
yeah.
there's way more dollars than there is available toilet paper?
Yeah, I know some people advocate, go into debt because you can pay your debt off in cheaper dollars, but there's no guarantee that the politicians won't mess that up and recalibrate debt so you don't really get off the hook. I think the best advice is for people to become as self-reliant and as independent as they can possibly be to mm-hmm. weather whatever may be on the horizon as a consequence of this crazy policy of printing money these days. So don't be head over heels in debt. Mm-hmm. Be in charge of your own life and prepare yourself for a period of very difficult times. Now, I'm hoping that the difficult times to come may be what will prompt Americans to say, you know, we tried this big government stuff and look where it put us. Let's restore the liberties that made America great in the first place. That's the direction I hope it'll all go.
You know, it seems to me in socialism, Marx envisioned a world where the people own everything, but the progressive Democrats seem to envision a world where the people owe everything.
Well, the only adjustment to that I would make is that Marx talked in terms of the people, but he really meant the state. Mm-hmm. And if you were not in sync with the state, then he would be happy to liquidate you. So he was really a man of the state. He wanted and saw it as an ultimate step toward communism, that the government should be in charge and own everything. He said that the abolition of private property was the very summation of his whole philosophy.
Yeah, I think that he was wrong about so many things. He was wrong that one person's gain must of necessity be at another person's loss.
Yes.
It seems to me that this noble experiment that we call America has proven that false. Why do you think so many people are swallowing the socialist pill?
In a lot of cases, people are getting it, especially young people, in the schools and universities.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times I've run into young people who say that their teachers told them socialism is caring and giving and sharing and so forth, when, of course, you get more caring, sharing, and giving under capitalism than you ever get under socialism. So people aren't, for the most part, being told that beneath the velvet glove is the iron fist. Socialism ultimately rests upon the use of force, the concentration of power. And in spite of all the promises that it's going to take care of you and do this and that for you, it comes down to one word, force. If it's voluntary, it's not socialism.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest. Again, you can find so many great resources at Lawrence W. Reed. That's lawrencewreed.com. And I just read The Knives of the Cancel Culture Are Out to Get Adam Smith. And what an amazing man. What an amazing contribution that he made to the world.
Yeah, yeah, now some people want to take his statue down.
Yeah, as if that's going to solve what exactly?
Well, they're not claiming that he was an advocate of slavery, because you can't. He was a vociferous opponent of slavery. But he said something in one of his books to the effect that slavery was an evil institution that was ubiquitous in history, meaning it's just always been around. And so some people have taken that as a sign that he was maybe not so much against it after all.
I'm actually a little amazed that the cancel culture knew what ubiquitous meant. But Lawrence Reed, thanks so much for being my guest. And thanks for the amazing resources that you provide for thoughtful people. Go to lawrencewreed.com.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.